Accession number 27267, Mr. Frank Luff, Reel 2. Now, when you were called up in November 1942, where were you sent to? What was your posting?
It's HMS Impregnable, which was a signal training centre that was stationed in a former naval prison. It was right on the coast and right on top of the big naval ammunition stores, so all night long you could hear the trains and that going around.
This is in Budo, Plymouth. Well, yep. Just outside Plymouth here.
Yeah, just outside Plymouth.
And what was the journey down like? I mean, you found a 10 bob note. That's a good start.
That was a good start. I don't remember much more of it.
But what about your reception when you got there? Because you know when you arrived, I know you'd been in the the Home Guard. What was the sort of reception when you got to HMS Impregnable?
Well, before that, one of the great things there, when you arrived at Plymouth, you used to get the overnight train there, and when you arrived at Plymouth at the following early in the morning, there was always a canteen outside run by the Lord Mayor of Plymouth, where you also always got a jam jar full of tea and a sticky bun. And then we had transfer lorries there, transport to take us to St. Budo. Once we arrived there, we were given a meal, and it was quite pleasant the way we was received there. We kitted out our first day, I think, after we'd had a chat about what was going on and what was happening.
Do you remember what they said? I mean, I know you won't remember exactly. What kind of thing were they saying?
It was quite a friendly welcome there. It really was, because we hadn't seen any of the officers or that. It was some chief petty officers, so forth. They showed us around and showed us where we were going to sleep. The sleeping accommodation was in huts all the way down the side of the hill, away from the main prison block as such.
Now, describe the huts. What were they like? I mean, you know, for you when you got in there.
They were corrugated iron huts, not the Nissen hut type, but the, you know, square type of huts. I suppose that we slept about 30 in a hut. No heating in them at all, but we had plenty of blankets, and they were two-tier bunks. I can remember getting so cold one night that I did put my oilskin over the bed, because we was issued with oilskins with our kit, but it was the once and only time I ever done it, because I didn't realise they were completely waterproof, so when you woke up in the morning your blankets were soaking wet, so you only ever done that once. But the accommodation in there was quite good. The place was kept spotlessly clean. One thing you had to make sure with every item of your kit had to have...
Let's talk about kitting out first. Yeah. What did they kit you out with? And what do you remember being kitted out? What happened?
Well, when you're kitted out with everything in the Navy, you get two of everything. And remember, this is the only lot you get, because you never ever get kit replaced in the Navy. You have to buy your own kit after that, because you get a clothing allowance of 6 months a week. The only thing you got one of was a hammock, of course. But everything like that you got two of.
And do you remember what you got? I mean,
oh, well, it was two uniforms, two sets of underwear, clothing, two sets of everything it was, your hats and so forth. The only strange thing was you got... what they call, never do anything easy in the Navy, you got set up with 24 clothes stops for hanging your washing up. Now, you'd think they would be clothes pegs, but they weren't. They were pieces of string about 9 inches long. You get 24 of those. That's to tie your washing on the line, if you ever found a line to tie your washing on. And a name stamp. You had to have everything with your name stamped on it, because if your name wasn't stamped on it, you had no claim to that whatsoever. I know on one occasion, soon after we was there, I bought myself a pair of shoes, because they only used to give you the very heavy boots. And I went down to the stores, bought the shoes, and they had metal stamps down there. You could stamp them in the boot. But just as I got there, they were piping for fall in, so I hadn't got time to do it. I rushed them back to the hut, put them on the top of my locker. Needless to say, when I come back after fall in, they'd gone. And you couldn't complain about it, because you hadn't got your name on them, so they weren't your property.
Now, we sort of look at the way we look at life journey training. It's look at a typical day, because you were there a long time. You seem to be there
for 6 months.
Yeah, from November months. Through to May 43. November.
It was a 6 months training course.
And we look at a typical day's training, so we pick up a lot of things that
well,
way.
Well, the first thing after you get your kit issued, you had to go and see your divisional officer.
Oh well, tell us about that first.
Yeah. So I go in individually. You have to go and see your divisional officer. So I go into him, and immediately I got in there, I gave him the envelope that I'd got from my previous CO. He said, "What's this?" I said, "A recommendation from my previous CO." He'd done no more, tore it completely in half and dropped it in the dustbin. That is true. And he gave you a talk to say what he was expected of you. You then used to have training, very intensive training all day long.
Well, tell me, let's go through it. What time would you get up in the morning? What time would you wake up?
I think you would wake up, I think it's somewhere around about 6:30 in the morning they'd wake you up. You're in that wash and be at breakfast at 7 o'clock.
Well, that's the first big stop. What was the food like? I mean, you know, you'd been used to army food. You'd had a couple of meals before. What did you think of the navy food at Impregnable? Breakfast, dinner, and lunch. We'll do all.
It was quite reasonable food there, and not much to complain about there at all as regards food.
Enough of it?
Yes, certainly. Yeah, we was well fed.
Varied enough diet, or was it all the same?
Yeah, it was quite. As far as I can remember, the diet, the food at. The Impregnable was quite good there.
Okay, so after breakfast, what training sessions would you do?
Well, first of all, you had a clean ship, which was...
Tell me about that. That's cleaning your barrack room, is it?
Well, you could be allocated to anything. You never knew what your job was. It may be sweeping the parade ground. Each week it used to change somewhat.
What was it like? What were you actually doing? Just cleaning?
Well, yeah, for half an hour you would. I mean, one day I thought I'd really clicked. I looked on the list there, and I'd list there, and I was captain of the heads. Well, I didn't realise I was captain of the heads, was cleaning the toilets. But nevertheless, that was... And then also I had to report to the gym every morning for half an hour, because when I had my medical... prior to going in the Navy, they discovered that my kneecaps weren't level. And they're still not to this day. One is about an inch higher than the other. And they said it was because I hadn't grown to my full height. So I used to have to go to the gym every morning for half an hour with the PTIs on stretching exercises. Things like hanging up the wall bars while they're hanging on my legs, or sitting down, sitting with my legs in front of me, trying to touch my toes, and one of them would sit on my shoulders. Very painful. And even to this day, I never ever grew anymore. My kneecaps are still not level.
What other PT would you get? I mean, that was just you, wasn't it?
That was just me.
PT.
What other
physical training PT would you get?
You'd get the usual thing. Vaulting horse, which I hated because I could never ever manage. Rope climbing, which I... grew a liking for and was quite good at. General exercises, they send us on cross-country running, things like that.
Did you get fitter? I don't know how fit you were.
Oh, yes.
It worked?
It worked. You did get fitter. There's no two ways about it, because, I mean, you was on a better diet anyway than you were in Sibby Street. But we used to get very intensive training on everything.
Let's go through some of the things you did then. What were you training in?
Well, every means of communication, you had to... I was a visual signalman, so therefore you had to learn Morse for a start.
Well, let's do that. How did you learn Morse? Because it's not easy. Well, it's not easy for most people.
No. Well, first of all, you had to learn the Morse alphabet. Then you had to learn how to use it with light... How to use it with the Morse key, you know, wireless. And also how to use it with flags, which you can do.
And how did you take to it?
Well, it was hard going, but I finished up with reasonably good results, as you can see on my record sheet. But I found Morse wasn't the hardest thing to learn. Semaphore was. Semaphore was extensively used, and surprisingly, once you'd learnt it, you found out if you came home on leave for 2 or 3 days or a week, when you got back, your Morse was about the same, but your speed on semaphore was always slower. I don't know why it was, but it always was.
You had more trouble learning it as well.
To get up to any speed, anyway. And as I say, we used to use every type of means of signalling that was known. We used to use heliograph.
The old flashing
light, you know, with the mirrors.
Tell me about that, because I mean that's getting quite out of date by then. How much did you use the heliograph?
Oh, not a great deal, but we had to know how to do it. We used to use Morse by having a red and white shutter, if you can imagine, like a Venetian blind with a pull string on the bottom. And so you could send Morse like that. We used to use mechanical semaphore as well, where you've got the two handles and the steel arms. It's going on a bit though.
Now, did you actually use the light Morse, you know, lamp signalling?
Yes.
So you used various forms of Morse and semaphore.
Yeah.
What about the flag signal system? You know, the old flag system.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that.
That was another thing altogether. First of all, you always had to know how to store the flags so that you could hook them up correctly, because you don't see them when you hook them up. They have to be in the right locker and got the right tags hanging out the end, you know, the head and the tack. Otherwise, you clip them all on and hoist them and it'd come out all jumbled up if you hadn't got them in the right place in the first place. I used to quite enjoy doing that. We used to do the flag masts, you know, holes on the flag mast, obviously. But every type of means you could think of signalling we used to use.
Now tell us a bit more about flag signalling, because that was quite important still in the Navy, wasn't it? I mean, one of the first mediums that they'd always hoist the flag signal. What was the basis of the flag signalling? I mean, how did it actually work?
Flag signalling was more if you was sending to more than one ship. Other than that, you would normally either use light or semaphore. We never used radio a great deal. In fact, it was radio silence mostly at sea. So in any case, we had telegraphists that used to do the radio Morse.
How did the flag system work? Because it's quite a complex, it's difficult, isn't it? There's a lot of it.
Oh, there's a lot of it. You get different code signals. You look up the code book and find the code group for some particular thing and you just hook it on and hoist it.
You had to learn to read it as well, as I presume.
Oh, yes, you had to read the flags, yeah.
How did you take it? There's a lot to learn.
Yeah, there is. That's why it was a 6-month course and you needed every minute of that 6 months. You really did.
Did you have... I mean, you'd not had a good education, really. You said...
I had a very, very poor education.
Did you have any trouble with all this learning? Because there is... I mean, some people struggle with signalling when they supposedly had a good education.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. I had a very, very basic education.
But you've managed all right with...
Yeah, I'd done pretty well there. I come through it. In fact, when I left there with a recommendation for small ships, to be sent to small ships.
Which is good, I mean...
Which I was pleased at the time. As it turned out, I was glad it never happened.
We will come back to that. So that's one thing you'd do. We've looked at all these various forms of visual signalling. Was there anything else they were teaching you? You know, during our typical day, we're still on that.
Apart from the signalling, you had to learn fleet manoeuvres.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, fleet manoeuvres is when you want to get the ships in a particular order, you know, in convoy order one was line astern. And what they used to get us to do there, we'd walk around with flags and we'd be in different formations. And order one, order two, and you'd hold the flag up, and then they say execute, and if it was a port turn or a starboard turn, you had to do these things. You were actually doing them
on the parade ground.
On the parade ground, but they'd be fleet manoeuvres, and which used to fool some of the officers sometimes. So when you got on board ship, you know, some of the younger officers weren't quite au fait with it, and they used to turn to the signal to ask you what to do, which was quite good for your ego at times.
Anything else you'd be doing? Any other training you'd do as either a signaller or, you know?
Well, you obviously was taught how to fire, you know, use a rifle.
Anything you didn't already know? Because, I mean, you'd done all the home guard. Anything new about that?
No, I don't think. The only thing is I did strike me as funny that, you know, when the scare was on that Germany was going to invade us, we did have alerts there that we used to have to go out on the night patrol along the coast there to man the defences. And believe it or not, we used to have to turn up on parade and we'd have the 1940 ammunition pouches on our chest, packed out with newspaper. And all we had, with the petty officer in charge of us had a Sten gun. All the rest of us had was a wooden club. That was all we had. And we were manning the defences along the coast. Not that we'd done any good. Fortunately, we never ever got called on to exercise any belligerent forces coming ashore. But we hadn't got any other equipment there at all. But it always amazed me, these ammunition pouches, we used to have to look smart with them, all padded out with newspaper.
Now, anything else you'd be doing? Any other training? Would you do any seamanship training?
Yes.
I know you're signallers, but you are
yes.
going to sea, you know.
Yes, we did do some. In fact, I think one time there, we thought we would, there was a group of about 10 of us, it was quite a warm day, and we asked the officer if we could take out one of the big 12-foot cutters that we used to use there, go out rowing in, with big long oars, I think about 10-foot oars. And we asked if we could borrow one of those for the day, on the day off, I think it was a Sunday, that we could row up the Tamar there, that we was on the Tamar, and he was all for it. So we set off and he came and see us off, and we goes up the Tamar there, going like good uns up there. What we didn't realise, our seamanship, there are marker boys all the way along the Tamar. We didn't take any notice of these, did we? And of course, we were only in a rowing boat, although it's a big 12-foot one. And we eventually finished up on a mud bank, and there we stuck. And you try to get out to try to push the thing off, and you finish up to your knees in mud. It was completely impossible to shift the thing. We did eventually attract attention to somebody ashore, and there the river is quite wide. And we did signal to them that we were stuck, and could they get in touch with HMS Impregnable. And the fellow, whoever he was a naval bird, he eventually came back to us. He said he'd been on the phone, and they told us to throw out an anchor to make sure we didn't drift any more further up on the sudden, and they would come and rescue us as and when they could. Well, this was in the afternoon. We eventually had to wait until the tide turned, and they sent a tug out to throw us a line and pull us off this mud bank. We eventually arrived back thinking we were going to get Jankers or something else. At 1 o'clock in the morning we arrived back at HMS Impregnable, and freezing cold, as you can imagine. And much to our surprise, they took us straight down to the kitchens, gave us hot soup and hot drinks, and wrapped us up nice and warm, and said, well, that's your first lesson in seamanship. In future, you take notice of navigation, boys. But surprisingly, none of us became ill because of that experience, but were much more wiser.
And any other, I mean, did you do the sort of seamanship stuff, you know, the rowing cutters, sailing things.
Yeah, we've never done sailing, but we've certainly done rowing.
And what about things like knots and splices?
Yeah, we did do some of those. Obviously, we needed some for, you know, our signalling halyards and that type of thing. So we did do some.
But not much seamanship?
Not a great deal of seamanship, no.
Now, so anything else you'd be doing training-wise? Or have we covered it all?
I think we just about covered it there.
Now, so you'd be doing...
The other thing was, because I was a non-swimmer, I used to have to go twice a week down to the jetty, and this was during November, December, and you used to have to go across to HMS Drake, where there's a swimming pool that had been bombed, that had got no roof on, no heating. And surprisingly, when you go there for swimming instruction, you weren't allowed to wear costumes. You had to go in the nuddies. And you'd get there, and they say, "Can you swim?" I say, "No, sir. Have you tried today?" "No, sir." "Right, in you go to the deep end." And after you've splattered and split for about 10 minutes, they pull you out and they say, "You can't swim." And this used to go on. This was your method of swimming. They did in the gym, used to go through, lay on a bench and go through the strokes of swimming. But that's as far as it got. And even when I left barracks, I still couldn't swim.
You hadn't passed the test then?
No. I hadn't passed the test.
But you tried to pass it? You know this business of swimming in a uniform?
Yeah, I couldn't even swim without anything on, let alone in uniform. They'd leave you there, I'd get so far, and then they'd have to haul me out with one of their long poles. I'd get halfway down, but I could never ever make a length. But what gave me encouragement about not wanting to swim, because soon after I left there, one of my colleagues, that was a champion swimmer, nobody could touch him. He was absolutely immaculate with his swimming. And the first ship he joined got torpedoed and he drowned. So I thought to myself, well, it didn't do him much good being able to swim, so it didn't worry me all that much.
Now, so after a day's training session, I mean, what was there for you to do in the evening? Was there any recreation time at all? I mean, did you have a canteen or anything?
Yeah, we had a naffy canteen there.
What was that like for you as young lads?
Well, you had a menu at the canteen that you could have egg and beans, egg, sausage and beans and egg, beans and sausage. You know, you had about 20 different varieties, but it all come down to about three things. What they did sell there... They used to sell the scrumpy cider, which was about fourpence a pint. But the naffy canteen was at the top of the hill, and the road down to the huts was a concrete road. And some bright idea one night, in the naffy canteen, we used to have long benches, which had metal seats across, you know, metal... I don't know if it's aluminium or stainless steel there, but they used to have to be kept polished. And so some night, when a few of us got well tanked up, they decided they'd have a toboggan down these concrete road down the slope on these upturned stools, until one fella fell in with two broken legs and another one with a broken arm. And so after that, they banned the selling of scrumpy at...
It is very strong, isn't it? I mean, this is real scrumpy. It's not like cider and pubs now.
It was. As I say, it was fourpence a pint.
Did you drink much scrumpy? I mean, sounds like you did.
After that, we'd never drank much because they banned the sale of it there. But, it was...
What about anything else to do?
Some of them formed a group in trying to form a band there, so they used to try and get put on some concerts for us. We used to be able to go ashore there after, I think it was about 3 weeks before we was allowed to go ashore.
Or into Plymouth or into...
Well, out of St Budo, you know, out the barracks itself. You weren't allowed out for 3 weeks because they had to assure themselves you knew how to wear the uniform. After that, you used to get... occasional night leave and weekend leave.
What would you do on your leave? Well, would you just go out drinking or what? Pictures? What?
Either go to the pictures or go down to Plymouth Hoe and walk around there. That was quite pleasant down there. although Plymouth at that time was in a terrible mess. The centre of Plymouth was just complete ruin. In fact, the only shops down there were market stores. In fact, it was you had Marks and Spencer's, Boots, and all shops like that. They was market stores because there was nothing else. It was just complete debris.
Would you go drinking much, or was that just not your thing?
I used to go drinking, but I never really went over the top. We had a big, nice, big naffy canteen in Plymouth itself, which was very good, where you could always go for a meal and, you know, a game of darts or snooker or something like that if you wanted to.
Now, how did you get on with the other lads, the other recruits? I mean, did you get on well with them? Was there any bullying? What was it like?
We used to knit together quite well. I'll tell you one of the shocks I did have, though, when we were sent to go and get code books. I don't know, there was 24 of us in the class, and they send six of us to go and get the code books, 24 code books. And you go out to the code book office, which was one of the, one of the cells in the prison, because you had the, it was just like the prison in the, you see in Porridge, you know, where you've got the mess deck downstairs that was covered with wire netting and the cells round the top, which used to house the dentist, the MO, and the code book office. And of course, when we went in the code book office and picked up four or five code books, we realised why they sent so many people, because they used to have lead covers, which was a quarter of an inch thick. And it was as much as you could do to pick up three of these code books, let alone 10 or 12 of them. The idea of it was, of course, if the ship got into trouble, you threw them overboard and they'd sink.
What about you? You haven't mentioned code training. You were doing coding training, were you? Decoding,
yes.
Coding.
Yeah.
What sort of codes were you using?
We used to use a naval code, which consists of groups of four letters, four numbers, sorry. We also used what they called NICO and PSYCHO, but I can't honestly remember those. But we didn't go into it too deeply. We only had to know the basics of coding and decoding, for the simple reason that coding was a specialised thing then. I mean, some of us were...
There were coders, weren't there?
Yeah. So some of us were, I say, went into wireless telegraphy. Others went into coding and ciphers, and they would concentrate on those rather than signals.
Now, you were telling me about the rest of the lads. What were they like? I mean, how did they treat you? How did you get on together? Were you all the same sort of background, or were the people with richer, better, worse background?
It was a complete mixture, we found. One of the great things you discovered, I mean, because you realised before the war, people never really travelled far from their own territory. And so coming across people from up north and Scotland was quite a culture shock, especially when you get somebody having cheese sandwiches and spreading jam on them. I could never understand that, but it was quite a common thing, apparently. But it did take quite a bit of getting used to. People from up north, especially their speech. You get people up from Gateshead, and when they want to close the door, they say put wooden thole and things like that. It got quite but we bedded down quite well together.
But there was no bullying.
No, I never came across any of that at all.
What about stealing? You mentioned your shoes went. You know.
Well, that sort of thing happened. Yes, it did. Obviously, you still had some people. It was a bit like fiend if they saw anything going. I suppose one of the first things that I'd never mentioned was from our first night in barracks in St Budo, we had to learn to sleep in hammocks.